Whole Hog Sports presents the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, the premier Arkansas hoops podcast, brought to you by Landers Toyota of Northwest Arkansas. With Whole Hog Sports basketball analyst Scotty Bordelon, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Eric Musselman likes to quote his late father, Bill Musselman, quite a bit when he's talking about runs during a game. He says there are three runs during a game. It's about how you can control two of those. That the team that controls two of those runs typically is the team that wins the game. If you look at the Razorback season right now, it's kind of like three runs. They started the year with nine straight wins, then they lost five of six games, and now they've won five straight after a couple of wins in the last week. Arkansas is 15-5 overall. They're 5-3 in the SEC going into their game this weekend against West Virginia at Bud Walton Arena. That game is part of the SEC Big 12 Challenge. Matt Jones with Bob Holt of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and Scotty Bordelon of Whole Hog Sports. And Scotty, when you look at this five-game win streak, what really stands out is the defense that the Razorbacks are playing. They weren't playing very good defense during that stretch when they were losing to OU and Hofstra and Mississippi State. Gave up a lot of points, a lot of three-pointers during those games. You know, their three-point defense seems like it's gotten a lot better in the last three and a half weeks after it was, you know, real leaky early in the season, and that was leading to a lot of their struggles. But defensively, they've only allowed Texas A&M to score more than 60 points in the last five games. The Aggies scored 64, and that was an overtime game. They ended up scoring 64 in regulation, 73 overall. Defensively, what do you think has changed for this team, and do you think it's something that is sustainable? Can this, you know, continue when they play the better teams on their schedule?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the improved three-point defense is a combination of Arkansas. Obviously, they're contesting shots a lot better than they were, I think, earlier in conference play. I think it's also a combination, like against Ole Miss the other night. Ole Miss was playing its second game in 3 days, and so I think you saw a little bit of tired legs from Ole Miss because I think they got some pretty good looks. I charted shots the other day. They took they got 12 uncontested shots. Three of those were threes, and they only made one of them. So I think that just goes to show you that Arkansas is, you know, getting out to perimeter threats a little bit with a little bit more urgency lately. I don't know that they're necessarily playing teams that are great at shooting the three, but Ole Miss, I mean, they were at around a 35 or 36% clip in conference games. Going into the Arkansas game the other day, the defense has just been really interesting to me lately. Like after that three-game losing streak to open conference, I don't think we would have ever expected to see Arkansas leading the SEC in conference games in defensive efficiency, but that's where they are right now. And I think it's a credit to, you know, guys like JD Notte. You know, he's been pretty good on the ball all year, but, you know, he, like the other night against Ole Miss, he really harassed Deshaun Ruffin, who's I think he's the first McDonald's All-American to ever sign with Ole Miss. They really limited him. I think he struggled shooting. I think it was like 2 of 11, 1 of 7 from 3. And the guys like Stanley Amude and Trey Wade have been awesome complimentary defenders too. Like they're giving Arkansas really good minutes on the offensive end and at times too. But going into that Ole Miss game, like Stan had given up 8 buckets on 52 field goal attempts in conference play going into that game. And Trey was like, he'd given up 13 on 42 shots. And so that's the kind of defense that you want to see. And then Jalen Williams has been, you know, as good as he's been scoring the ball lately and rebounding the ball, like at really steady high clips. He's been an anchor defensively, and you factor in like the charges he's taken and the steals that he's coming up with. You know, I think he's got a case as one of the, you know, top interior defenders in the league. I think teams are shooting 35% against him, you know, inside the 3-point line in conference play. So that's credit to all of those guys. They've been really, really solid lately when Arkansas needed, you know, a bit more urgency on the defensive end.
Bob, you wrote about Trey Wade today and how Arkansas hadn't lost a game since he's gone into the starting lineup. Eric Musselman, after the game the other night, mentioned Trey Wade and how physical he's been, and maybe the physicality that they've added with this bigger lineup early in the games. It's maybe set a tone, you know, a different tone early in the games for him. Whereas, you know, we talked a lot early in the season about them falling behind in games and having to come back and win them. And yesterday I was talking to Matt Zimmerman, the basketball radio analyst for the Razorbacks. And, you know, he was talking about Trey Wade. He said he looks like a middle linebacker out there in the middle of the court, pointing, you go here, you go here. And then obviously he looks like a linebacker physically. It seems like, you know, you talk about defense has been a big turning point for this team, and maybe defensively he's been part of that turning point.
Yeah, Eric Musselman and his teammates talk about how vocal he is. And really, you know, talking on defense is so important. You know, you watch some of these games and you see these poor guys run into these picks and nobody's calling it out, or they're not calling it out loud enough. And you see these guys just get plastered and it's not a foul because nobody called out the pick to him. But, you know, communication in basketball on both ends I think is really important, but especially on defense. And, you know, like, say, Trey, he's an older guy. He's a fifth-year guy. He's been around. You know, he's a guy that played West Virginia a couple of years ago when he was at Wichita. I was looking that game up, and I think it was a season opener 2 years ago, and West Virginia beat him. But so he can kind of tell his guys, the personnel may have changed. Bob Huggins is still the coach. They still have this style. West Virginia's struggling right now, but they're probably going to come in here and play pretty physical. They're going to be pretty desperate for a win. But yeah, Trey's been really important. I think when people think about teams getting off to good starts, getting off to leads, they think about hitting shots, which of course you have to do if you're going to jump out on somebody 20-4 or 26-3 like they did in Missouri. But really, those runs started with defense, you know, getting stops, first of all, getting turnovers, getting transition points. And so I think a big reason Arkansas has gotten off to these hot starts and gotten big leads a lot of times is because of their it certainly started on the defensive end.
I think it's really important that, you know, Arkansas has kind of got a second voice on the defensive end. You know, Jalen has been one of Arkansas's more vocal guys like all year long. And I think that kind of started last year, you know, when his role, you know, started to increase in the back half of the season. But, you know, earlier in the week, I asked Audis Tony about Trey, and, you know, the team calls him Uncle Trey. And Audis was saying that, you know, Trey gives the team, you know, uncle vibes, like old man vibes. And, you know, one of the things that he does defensively is kind of like an uncle. Like if he sees that one of the other guys is like not on the same page with everybody else, it's almost like an uncle getting onto his nephew and straightening them out and getting everybody connected again on the same page. I just think that that's really important, that two guys that are kind of on the back line of your defense are, you know, they're really pointing out and doing a really, really good job of communicating what they're seeing. So Arkansas's guards don't get taken out like Sevier Wheeler, you know, has at Kentucky in recent games. Now, he's been literally dealing with some concussion type stuff just because other guys, especially like the forwards on their team, just won't communicate and call out ball screens, that kind of thing. That's just super, super important.
It's become really obvious to me that Jalen Williams is what makes this team go really on both ends of the floor. We've talked a lot about his passing, his scoring has gotten a lot better. And then defensively, I don't know that there are many players that are playing better than him in terms of how he takes charges, blocks shots, rebounds the ball. Bob, I'm curious. I know we got a lot of season left to go here. I think you vote on the AP all SEC teams. If the season were to end today, do you think he's first team, second team all SEC?
Yeah, I think you definitely make a case for him to get all SEC recognition. Those 10 top 10 players, which would be two teams, which I think is what AP picks. So, you know, the coaches, they might pick, you know, 20 guys because they want everybody to get recognition. And, of course, you know, those players are deserving. It's 14-team league. But, yeah, Jalen, if you look, you know, his stat, usually your stats are better non-conference play because, you know, you might play some good non-conference teams, but generally speaking, an SEC team, a Big Ten team, Big 12 team, whatever, they're going to play a lot of guarantee games where they can really dominate. And to me, it's impressive that Jalen's really taken off here in league play, and his stats are better in SEC games than they are in regular games. And I think he was a confident player coming into the season, but I think he was maybe deferring to teammates on the offensive end. You know, it's great to be a good passer and set guys up and all that. And he's a really good passing big man. You know, he's got a great assist to turnover ratio, but I think the coaches and fans are probably glad to see, and his teammates are glad to see he's got more aggressive looking for a shot. And, yeah, he just seems to be getting better and better, and he's doing against the best teams on their schedule so far.
You know, I think a lot of it would come down to just how voters format the team. Like, you're going to go with maybe three guards and two forwards, or maybe two guards and two forwards and a kind of a tweener type guy. I think Jalen's got his place on those all SEC teams. It just might not be first team just because Oscar Tshiebwe is such a, you know, he's a dominant physical presence for Kentucky. And it's like, you just kind of gotten used to him going for 15 to 20 rebounds in a game. And then Walker Kessler has just been super dominant around the rim for Auburn too. And they're the top team in the country. So I figured those two guys would have a place on that first team. But I think the way Jalen's playing right now, I mean, he's got a pretty intriguing case to be made for him too.
Of course, I think JD Note might be a first team all SEC with the way he's scoring right now. Since our last basketball podcast, Razorbacks won games over Texas A&M 76-73 in overtime. That game was in Fayetteville. And then in midweek this week, they went down to Oxford and beat Ole Miss 64-55. The Ole Miss game, I don't know about you guys, that just kind of felt like one of those games that you just kind of get through. You know, there was no build up to it. It was a 6 o'clock tip off. You know, obviously Ole Miss is not as good of a team this year. So I want to go back to the A&M game, because I thought that was one of the more entertaining games that Arkansas has played in this year. They let A&M really force overtime with the way they played in the final minute of the first half and the final minute of the second half. A&M closed the first half, I think, on an 8-1 run. They closed the second half on an 8-2 run. And, you know, otherwise that might have been a 15-point win for the Razorbacks. They got out to a 16-point lead early in that game. I was really impressed with how Arkansas played in overtime, because when A&M hit the shot with, 9 seconds left to force overtime, I thought they're going to win this game because they've got the momentum. And JD Note had fouled out with about a minute and a half, minute 50 left. And Arkansas got good contributions from Devontae Davis. You know, Devo had a big 3-point play in overtime. Jalen Williams, I thought, played really well in the overtime period, you know, from some others. I thought it was really impressive, Scotty, that they were able to win the game the way they were, because, again, I it didn't look too good for them at the end of regulation. And that probably was the mood within the building.
I think I remember toward the end of regulation, right before A&M ended up hitting that three to tie the game, I think I leaned over to Bob and I was like, they need a defensive stop really bad right now, because they probably don't feel super confident going, you know, another 5 minutes without JD, because, you know, JD fouled out with a little bit over a minute left. And at that point, like, Arkansas had outscored A&M by 14 points when JD was on the floor, and somehow you're only up three. And that's just, I think I ended up writing after the game that Arkansas just needs JD on the floor, like, in the worst way, just because Devo is just, he's been uncharacteristically loose with his handle lately. It seems like almost any time he drives, like, he's either bobbling the ball, losing the ball out of bounds, turning the ball over, and he just got to stop that. And, you know, you go to another point guard option, and it seems, as of, you know, after the Ole Miss game, that Chris Likes has just kind of over dribbled his way out of the rotation to a degree. And, you know, he played 1 minute the other night, had one turnover, and Trey Wade got put on a poster because Chris Likes didn't get back on defense. And, you know, he threw that pass to Trey, way over Trey's head. And then, you know, Chris is looking at Trey and he throws his hands up. I'm like, you've got to get back on defense. Those are the types of things that prevent you from not getting back on defense, prevent you from getting any more time on the floor. Like, Eric has made it a point lately that either you're going to defend or you're not going to play. And Chris not getting back in transition wasn't a good look the other night, just kind of compounded a turnover there. But I just think, like, JD's just so important to this team. Like, Arkansas's net rating is like, they're like 30 points better per 100 possessions when JD's out there. And I don't know if that is like an indictment on the rest of the point guard group, but I think it just really more speaks to the level of player JD is, and just how important he is, not only scoring the ball, but he can get teammates involved too. And then obviously I think he is, at this point, he's their best perimeter defender, at least at the guard spot.
You know, Eric Musselman and Buzz Williams came into the league at the same time 3 years ago, and man, it would be hard, I think, to find, you know, two better additions in the last 4 or 5 years to the SEC, just in terms of how they coach during the game. I think both of them are really good in-game coaches. And I was so impressed with the play that A&M drew up to hit the three that forced overtime. Marcus Williams drove baseline. Everyone crashes down to try to challenge that shot. He had no intention of taking that shot. Drives baseline. Hassan Diarra is running, you know, behind him. Kick it back to him. Little head fake. Stanley Amude flies into Gucci Rowe, and Diarra has got a wide open three to force overtime. That was an incredible play call, I thought, and really some props to Buzz Williams and his staff for calling it up.
Yeah, I really think that Buzz is – he's one of the better coaches maybe in college basketball at drawing up plays after timeouts. He drew up another play, and I think it was a – from what I can remember, Greg Popovich runs this play. It's called like a hammer set where a guard runs from like the elbow off a screen to the right wing, and then he dribbles toward the right baseline, and then the big on the opposite block sets a screen – on or sets a screen for the guard on his side of the floor, and then that guard flows to the left corner, and that, you know, normally leads to an open three, but you know, Trey Wade blew that up, and if it was not for Trey, like, that's another open three, and maybe it's a different ball game. But yeah, I was super impressed with Buzz Williams's ATOs, and you know, the play that got them the bucket to eventually send it to overtime. I mean, Arkansas would have been obviously better off just allowing that layup, just completely just kind of matador defense, just go ahead and let them take the layup. Because you should have, I think, the presence of mind at that point to know you're up three, and a layup is going to do them no good at that point with so little time left on the clock. But yeah, those ATOs were beautiful.
Such a weird ending to that game. Arkansas inbounds it. Stanley Amude has a breakaway dunk with 0.9 seconds left to put them up by three. Everyone in the arena thinks the game is over. Players are running onto the floor. The lights turn out. You've got the, you know, the smoke coming out of the pyrotechnics coming out of the backboard. There's still time left. A&M has a chance to hit it. Diarra nearly hit, you know, kind of close to a half court heave to tie it up. But Bob, that was such a weird ending. And am I right that had A&M inbounded the ball and the lights gone off, I think that would have been a technical and free throws for the Aggies.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. I'm really not sure how that works or if they just replay the play. I'm glad that didn't happen because it was late enough. It was late tip off to begin with that we had overtime. So I'm glad we didn't have a light malfunction controversy. But yeah, I mean, and the funny thing is, I think that was Diarra's only basket of the game, that three that sent it to overtime. He's really not known as a great offensive player, but, you know, he had some big free throws to help A&M beat Arkansas down in College Station. You know, Buzz, I think he played 3 minutes in the first half of that game. Buzz puts him in. He's like a 55% free throw shooter. He gets fouled. He hits the first free throw. Then the second one bounces high off the rim, bounces in. Buzz takes him out. They hug, you know, the Aggies win. But so Diarra is kind of a clutch player, but yeah, I honestly don't know what the ground rules are on lights going out. I mean, it's probably different if the lights, like, there's some kind of power outage, or if, you know, the team, you know, whoever is in charge of lighting, who I have no idea who that is, but if they turn the lights off thinking that the game's over, you know, that I could definitely see where that could be a technical on the home team, but I honestly don't know. It's kind of like if fans throw stuff on the court, it can be like, I think that could be a technical on the home team. It's sort of like you're supposed to control your home crowd. You're supposed to, you know, not have your band play during the game. There's probably a whole handbook, SEC handbook, on do's and don'ts during games. And I would think turning lights off while the game's still going on is probably one of the don'ts, but I honestly don't know the exact, how that flows. But that would have been a horrible way to lose the game. Somebody probably would have lost their job over that if that had happened, I'm guessing.
I have a feeling somebody probably got a talking to either way after that, Scotty.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Whenever you see the lights go off and fireworks start shooting out, I mean, you think the game's over. And that's, you know, I asked Stanley Amude, I was like, what happened? Like, walk me through the final sequence, because I mean, he put a man in the rim. Like, that was a really exciting way to punctuate the game, and then the lights go out, fireworks go off, he thinks the game's over. I mean, I think everybody thought the game was over except maybe Buzz Williams. He probably still thought that there should have been time left on the clock just because he's heady and he understands time and situation and that kind of thing. But I mean, that was it wasn't the official cherry on top of a pretty exciting win. But I mean, I feel like Stanley Amude was due one of those types of plays because he's such an explosive athlete. I mean, you can see it anytime that he skies for a rebound when he's super engaged, like he's head and shoulders above everybody else. And I feel like he went and took out a little bit of frustration. And Eric Musselman and Stan and Jalen Williams, you know, they all thought that should have been an and one. So I mean, if you give Stan the free throw there and A&M inbounds, I mean, there's literally no chance that they could have tied the game, you know, if he gets a whistle there. And there were plenty of whistles called in that game, but for whatever reason, there wasn't one right there.
The Basketball Podcast of Mid-America is brought to you by Landers Toyota of Northwest Arkansas. Visit their showroom at 411 South Metro Parkway in Rogers or online at LandersToyotaNWA.com.
For all your automotive needs, shop Landers Toyota NWA in Rogers, where we guarantee you the best buying experience and best service after the sale in Arkansas. Landers Toyota NWA in Rogers.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
West Virginia comes to town this weekend for the SEC Big 12 Challenge at Bud Walton Arena. That game will tip off at 1 o'clock and will be televised by ESPN2. The Mountaineers started the season really well, but they come into this game really kind of licking their wounds. They've lost four straight games to Big 12 teams. Now, of course, you know, you ask some people, and they might tell you the Big 12 is the best basketball conference out there, but West Virginia, it's not been pretty for them the last couple of weeks. They've lost to Oklahoma. They've lost to Kansas. They've lost to Baylor. They've lost, I believe, to Texas Tech. It's a team that just really comes in, and I don't know what you expect from West Virginia. Bob Huggins coach teams are always, you know, thought to be hard-nosed, defensive, good rebounding type teams. But I don't know that this is really the typical Bob Huggins team.
Yeah, I mean, they're 13-6, which isn't a bad overall record, but they start off really well. They had some good wins early. And I watched Bob Huggins' post-game press conference Wednesday. They lost at home to OU 72-62. And, of course, Arkansas knows how good OU is because OU took them to the woodshed late in the Tulsa game. But, yeah, Bob Huggins just looked like a guy that was searching for answers. You know, he talked about how they don't really run offense. They don't pass. He was talked about apologizing to some freshmen for not playing them. Talked about he might have to make some changes. You know, it's funny. It's Abel Saboyan, a former Razorback who got into some disciplinary stuff with Eric Mubb. When Eric, you know, first few months on the job, he dismissed Gabe, but Arkansas helped Gabe get to West Virginia. And this is before you had the automatic waiver where you could transfer and be automatically eligible. And I think Arkansas's, you know, compliance office helped Gabe get eligible. He didn't have to sit out West Virginia. I think this would be his third season there. And, you know, he had 17 points against Oklahoma. I let him in. I think it was his career high. He's really not a guy you think of as a scorer. He's a rebounder, defensive guy. He's a guy that takes a lot of charges like Jalen does. But, yeah, West Virginia's struggling without a doubt. But, you know, if I was Arkansas, I'd be pretty wary of them coming in here. Their backs are against the wall. It'd be a huge win if West Virginia could get it. I think they feel like they're a bubble team. Arkansas has been climbing up the net, but they're obviously still on the outside looking in, I think, when it comes to NCAA bids. So this would be a really big win for Arkansas to get. I mean, honestly, if they lost the way that West Virginia's playing, it'd be a bad loss for Arkansas at home, I think. This is a big game for Arkansas. It's just like an SEC game, honestly. And, I think West Virginia's – they're struggling, but I think they're still a dangerous team. They've obviously got talent. I mean, I'm looking over here at their stats. Ted Sherman's got averages over 18 points. Sean McNeil averages over 13. And, you know, Bob Huggins, I don't know how many times he lost four in a row. I bet he sure hadn't lost five in a row very often. So I think it's a pretty dangerous game for Arkansas. You just don't really know what you're going to get from West Virginia. Are they going to come in here all jacked up and with their backs against the wall, or are they going to kind of limp in here? And if Arkansas jumps on them with a big crowd, are they going to succumb pretty easily? So I have a hard time believing Bob Huggins won't have him ready to play. And, you know, he beat Arkansas pretty good twice when he was at Cincinnati. I was a long time ago, different team. He was a lot younger, but, you know, he's had success in Walton Arena.
We talked to Trey Wade on Thursday, and I think, Bob, you asked him, you know, what do you kind of expect to see from West Virginia? And the word that he used was desperate. And we hear that a lot, you know, this time of the year when maybe a team is struggling in conference play and they need to, you know, kind of get back on track. The thing that kind of stands out to me is Sean McNeil. Like, he's shooting 40% from three this year. And Taz Sherman, I think he's a pretty unique guard. He's going to be one of their more, you know, ball dominant guys. He's not ball dominant to the degree that maybe a JD Notae is, but takes a pretty healthy percentage of their shots. One area of the game that I think Arkansas might be able to maybe take control, and, you know, if Arkansas offensive rebounds well, you know, with their big lineup, you know, I think they might be able to you know, maybe grab control of this game pretty quickly. You know, I say that and it will probably turn out to be the exact opposite, but for the season, you know, West Virginia has given up an offensive rebound on 33.8% of opponent shots this year. And that's 339th in the country. That just doesn't sound at all to me like a Bob Huggins type team. And right now, Gabe Osaboyan is West Virginia's best defensive rebounder. So I think with this bigger lineup that Arkansas is using, you know, if they can, you know, kind of take the physicality to West Virginia and kind of punch them, you know, I think Arkansas has got a pretty good chance to roll in the next week, you know, winners of six straight.
Bob mentioned that Bob Huggins has had success in Bud Walton Arena. This will be his second trip, but his first since December 9th, 1995. And the reason that game was significant, when Cincinnati beat Arkansas 82-67, that was the last game that Bill Clinton attended while he was still president, the last Razorback game that he attended. That was a big game for a lot of reasons. When the Razorbacks played the Bearcats last time that Bob Huggins came to town, it'll be the first time that Arkansas plays West Virginia since the Razorbacks beat them in the 06-07 season, beat them 71-64 in the Old Spice Classic. They were coached at that time by John Beilein. We mentioned Gabe Osaboyan coming back to Bud Walton Arena, and it's kind of interesting to me that it seems like we are having a lot more instances of Arkansas seeing former players, and I think part of that is due to transfers are more prevalent now, but then also you've got the freedom of movement for transfers where they don't have to sit out a season. And so Justin Glory does a great job at hogstats.com. He's actually got a page listed where you can see all of the times that former Razorbacks played against Arkansas, games both in Fayetteville or on their new campus. And up until 5 years ago, it had only happened five times. Of course, the most famous probably was when Sunday Adebayo came back with Memphis in the mid-90s and had a great game, went, you know, back and forth with Derek Hood during that year where the NCAA had told him he couldn't play at Arkansas anymore. And then they gave him a year of eligibility, said they missed up. He got to come back to Arkansas, got a great, you know, ovation that day when he came back for Memphis, played a good game, had 15 points and 15 rebounds, but only five times up until 5 years ago. And when Osaboyan comes back on Saturday, it'll be the ninth time in the last five seasons that Arkansas is going to play against a former player. It's already happened multiple times this season. They saw Darius Hall from UCA. They saw Bebe from Hofstra down in North Little Rock, Ethan Anderson a couple of times in these two A&M games they've played. It's just really interesting that you're seeing former players come back so often, Bob, when it was just really something that you never used to see.
Yeah, like you said, I think this will be the fifth time. And, but yeah, I think that's really the way it's happening with the portal. You know, when Arkansas was was getting ready to play down at A&M, somebody asked Buzz Peterson in an A&M media session about, you know, Ethan Henderson playing his whole team, and then Jackson Robinson, a guard at Arkansas, who was at A&M last year. It was almost like a player redeemed later thing. I think Ethan committed to A&M, and then maybe, I don't know, less than a month later, Jackson Robinson committed to Arkansas. And Buzz said he just thought this was something that was going to become commonplace, where teams were playing other teams and seeing old players, you know, former players, because, you know, in the old days, one, you had to redshirt. Generally speaking, you had to redshirt if you transferred. But then they had these different rules where you could apply for waivers, and sometimes guys got waivers, sometimes they didn't. You know, Connor Vanover, we thought he might get to play here his first year when he transferred from Cal, but he didn't. And you kind of wondered, well, why is player X getting a waiver and player Z isn't, you know, for whatever reason. But so I think it's good they're just giving them everybody a blanket waiver now. And also schools used to be able to block players. Like, it's okay, you can't transfer within the – like, we don't want you to play for a team we're going to play, or we don't want you to play for another conference team or whatever. And you know, some coaches were cool with saying, hey, go wherever you want to go, and other coaches weren't. And so the coaches really had – the schools had all the power. And so I think it's really good that there's freedom of player movement, just like the coaches. I mean, no, we see coaches, especially in the SEC football, we see coaches move within the conference all the time. So if the coaches can do it, why can't the players? So I think it's good that they've leveled that playing field and given the players more freedom. Because most guys, I think, leave for better playing time, better situations. Maybe there's a coaching change. Maybe they're in the doghouse, whatever. I mean, Gabe got dismissed from the team here. And to Eric Musselman's credit, I would say they did everything they could to help him get to West Virginia and be able to play right away. And they had no idea 3 years later they'd be playing Gabe Osaboyan. But he's been a key player for West Virginia. He doesn't play a ton. I think he's usually coming off the bench playing about 20 minutes. But he's been he averages about 5 points, 5-plus rebounds, great defender. But, yeah, I think this is something you're going to see more and more as the portal just gets, you know, more and more crowded. You're going to see teams playing former players a lot because, you know, players maybe want to transfer – you know, maybe they can't play at Arkansas. They still want to play in the SEC, or they can't play wherever. But I think there was 6 or 7 players this year that transferred in basketball, transferred from one SEC school to another. And of course, we're seeing it in football a lot.
And it seems like these players, when they play the Razorbacks after they've transferred, a lot of times they have really good games. In the 13 previous times that it's happened, 6 players have scored in double figures, including Darius Hall with 12 this year, RJ Glasper with 14 last year for ORU, and then Bebe may have had the game of his life in North Little Rock, Scotty, when he scored 18.
Yeah, Bebe was really good. He sliced Arkansas's interior defense to pieces. That was pretty stunning to see. Like, that was, I think that was when Arkansas got him. I think what he showed in North Little Rock was like the ceiling maybe of what they thought they might have been getting. I think it's going to be interesting to see maybe the I don't know if the welcome that Gabe gets, but just the reaction to him returning. I think it's fair to say, Bob, that Gabe didn't have exactly the most aesthetically pleasing game, especially on the offensive end when he was here. But I think people do recognize and appreciate the defensive effort he gave. And I thought he had great defensive anticipation. I remember writing a column one time just about how, you know, when teams tried to enter the ball in a post-up type situation, Gabe was awesome at just slipping off either hip of the guy in front of him and coming away with a steal. And, you know, it's funny, like, at the rate Jalen Williams is taking charges, and, you know, Gabe Osaboyan is, you know, he's more than willing to take charges. We might be looking at a Wisconsin basketball level type number of charges drawn in this game.
Yeah, I hope the fans will remember Gabe, you know, wasn't his idea to leave here. And I'm not knocking Eric for dismissing him, because he obviously had good reason to do that, I'm sure. But, you know, Gabe was a good player here, played really hard. You know, he was limited offensively. That's why seeing him score 17 the other night was a shock to me. But I was watching some highlights, and he was driving the ball, and I'm sure he'll be very motivated to play back here. It's kind of different because, you know, none of these guys on Arkansas now, he doesn't know any teammates, didn't really get to know coaching staff very well. I guess he might have been here for a little while, maybe when JD and Connor were here for their redshirt year. I'd have to match up the timeline, but I think he might know those guys a little bit. But I would imagine, you know, Gabe will be pretty motivated to play back here. But like I say, I hope the fans don't boo him because he was a good kid here, good player, played hard, and you know, things just didn't work out where he had to leave. But I give Arkansas's current staff a lot of credit for helping him.
Bob mentioned he scored 17 points against OU the other night in 19 minutes. The three previous games, Osa Boyan had scored 8 points total in 57 minutes against Texas Tech, Baylor, and KU, including an Ofer in 17 minutes out in Lubbock. So don't know what you're going to get from Gabe Osa Boyan. But
something else that's pretty interesting is one of his highest scoring games in his college career is also against Gonzaga. So go figure that one out.
Yeah, I mean, if history is any indication, he's going to have he's got the potential to have a big game just because we've seen players come back and have big games at Bud Walton in the past. Arkansas and West Virginia on Saturday. The Razorbacks will go back into conference play next week. They're going to play down at Georgia. And that game became a little bit more interesting the other night when Georgia beat Alabama. Alabama's been real hit and miss. You just don't know what you're going to get with Alabama. It's certainly maybe kind of like Arkansas. It's not the team that we thought they were going to have in the preseason. And I don't really know what to think about the SEC race right now, other than to say Auburn is clearly the best team, number one nationally. They've got a 16-game winning streak. Only Auburn has a longer winning streak than Arkansas among SEC teams right now. I think Kentucky is pretty good. After that, it just seems like it may be a free-for-all. And maybe Arkansas does end up third in the conference still, because there's just doesn't seem like there's any clear-cut third-best team. You thought it might be LSU. LSU's really fallen off since that game against the Razorbacks. I don't know that Tennessee is what we thought Tennessee was going to be. Florida has kind of come back down to earth after a really good start. Seems like the SEC is up for grabs behind Auburn.
It really does. And I thought, you know, when I was watching the Auburn-Georgia game in real time and you see Georgia playing way above its head, I thought that was a good thing for Arkansas that, you know, Georgia kind of got that, you know, playing with supreme confidence that they normally don't play with. And they, you know, that can be a tough place to play just because there's not always just a ton of energy in the building, and that can kind of, you know, zap you a little bit. But I thought it was a good thing that, you know, maybe Georgia went ahead and got that game out of their system against Alabama.
Yeah, I'm always leery of playing a team that hadn't won in a conference play, because you figure, well, they're going to beat somebody. You know, women's game the other night, Auburn, I think, had lost 34 straight SEC regular season games, and they beat number 4 Tennessee, which is really, you know, experienced a revival this year. And so obviously that's a women's game, you know, different game than obviously the men's game. But yeah, you see Missouri almost beat Auburn at home the other night. I think road games in college basketball in general are tough to win. I think in conference it's really tough because the teams know you a little bit better. And, you know, Georgia, I mean, I don't know if anybody lost more players to the transfer portal in Georgia. You see them all over the SEC with, you know, Wheelers at Kentucky. And of course, you know, the other night, Arkansas, they had Ty Fagan there from Georgia playing for Ole Miss. And they've got Johnson, the kid at Auburn. I'm sure it's tough on Crean and the Georgia fans to see all these Georgia players doing so well at other places. But, you know, Georgia's still an SEC program. You know, Tom Crean's I think he's a solid coach. He may have trouble hanging on to his job just because of what's, you know, the fourth year and things still haven't gotten going there. And even with the number one pick in the draft a couple of years ago, you know, they couldn't get to the NCAA tournament. So, but yeah, if I'm Arkansas, I really wouldn't want to play Georgia if they hadn't won a conference game. You just figure, man, there's a bullseye on somebody that Georgia's going to hit. And so that doesn't mean they couldn't beat Arkansas. I mean, SEC road games are hard to win.
Yeah, and that Missouri loss to Auburn the other night and maybe a half-empty Mizzou arena, that certainly kind of got my attention. Auburn good, maybe not unbeatable, and they're going to have that big bullseye on their back playing as number one, potentially, when they come into Bud Walton Arena on February the 8th. Again, the Razorbacks in the next week will play West Virginia, 1 o'clock Saturday at Bud Walton Arena. They'll go down to Georgia next Wednesday night. As always, we encourage you to go to wholehogsports.com before, during, after the games. We've got lots of coverage of Razorback basketball. It's also Razorback baseball preseason beginning this weekend. Lots of Razorback baseball coverage on our site as well. And relaunching here in the next couple of 3 weeks, will be the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. You can find that podcast and all of our podcasts by searching Whole Hog Radio, three words, WHOLEHOGRADIO, Whole Hog Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Chances are you'll find our podcast there. Hope you'll give us a review, subscribe. It'll help others find our podcast. For Bob Holt and Scotty Bordelon, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us on this edition of the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, and we'll see you again next week.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.